Moon Poems today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Therese Guise has written some moon poems as well as other works. We'll ask her about them on Scribble. I mean, is that a separate category of poetry, moon poems? Like sonnets and ballads?
No, I just call them moon poems because they are poems based on the name of the moon, either from the Farmer's Almanac or from the Native American name for the moon. And it was really a bit of an assignment. I go to the drum circle at the Unitarian Church in Davenport, and Meg Bullock runs that, and she got wind that I wrote poetry, and Aubrey Jane Ryan was also going to the drum circle at the time, and she assigned us to write poems to bring monthly to the group. And because it was a monthly occurrence, Aubrey had the idea to base it on the moon. And I think that was a good idea. And it just gave a little bit of framework, springboard, if you will, to write the poems. And they're very nature-based. The later ones took more of a autobiographical turn. Mm-hmm. Just not really intentionally, but that's just kind of the way that worked.
You know, in reading through the couple of Jack books that Clara Caldwell lent me of yours, one of the things that struck me is that your attitude toward nature and feeling about nature is much like Mary Oliver's, but there's also much more ritual involved.
I love her work, absolutely love Mary Oliver's work.
But she has no ritual. She just goes down with the corner tree she loves and sits and talks to it. Whereas, and that's one way of doing it, but your way is to frame it more, to structure it.
I am nature-based, as she is. I think there is, and she does bring in a mystical aspect sometimes.
She does.
But
it just sort of happens, whereas you said, too, that this gives you a framework.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Why do poets, you know, poets want to be free, but they always seem to give themselves limitations. I mean, Wordsworth, you know, the romantic poet, tried to answer that in a poem that begins, "Nuns fret not at their convent's narrower room." That is, the poet needs to give himself some limitations.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Frost, he didn't like free verse because it's like riding horse without a saddle. You're just going anywhere, right? And you've got to rein in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a strong believer in structure because what I've observed in the variety of the arts, if you are forced to fit within some kind of framework, it seems to release all sorts of creativity. Whereas if you're just free to roam, you don't know where to start and where to stop.
And because I usually write in a free verse style, I think the thematic constraint helps to rein it in, if you will. I agree, it can become formless and directionless without some sort of a framework.
The thing is, free verse is a very bad name for what free verse is, right? Free verse really isn't free. It's free from outward constraints,
correct,
but it has its own inward constraints. I'm thinking of John Crow Ransom wrote a poem called "Bells for John Whiteside's Daughter" about this 12-year-old neighbor who suddenly died after running all over the place. And the opening line is, "There was such speed in her little body." Mm. And boy, do you get the feeling of speed. Whereas if he'd said, "Her little body had such speed," you know, he's not free to say, "Her little body had such speed." He's free to say, to structure it exactly so it feels like fast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? So free verse isn't free. And I, right. You know, the thing that intrigued me about both of your books, you give a lot of credit to the drum circle. And so I started reading the poems with that in mind. But I'm intrigued. You know, I've heard the idea drum circle before. I know people who've done it. But what is a drum circle?
They vary. They definitely vary. Meg's drum circle is a place we drum, but it's a communal.
Well, drum, you mean sit there and go bang, 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 or what?
I'm the only one there with an Irish drum. It's a Bowron. I learned to play Irish drum when I lived in Chicago.
Okay.
And it's a single frame drum, goat skin. Many of the attendees have the Native American style drum, which is deer skin. Some of them have taken workshops to build those drums. Grant, who's part of the group, he is an actual drummer, percussionist, and he brings in various drums. He once brought in a hollowed out stump with sticks and pounded out amazing rhythms and got amazing amount of sound on that. We do drum and we do other things, and such as reading poetry, singing songs, some dance, some ritual.
So how does that drum circle relate to your own writing?
They were the audience I had in mind, because I wrote these specifically for them. They were who I had in mind as my audience to present it to. Some of my other work, my other poems, can maybe be a little darker, for lack of a better word. This was always with the intention to uplift, to maybe bring meaning into unfortunate circumstances or maybe a mystical aspect, a general positivity. I wanted people who read or listened to me read the poems to...
Your poems, though, aren't quite as positive as a Hallmark card.
No.
Right? I'm thinking of Jane Hirschfield. I read her last year, so I've tried this out on every poet we've done a program with. She made a statement that I really find intriguing. No good poem is ever entirely safe.
Mm. That's
right?
Brilliant.
There's always a dark edge there.
That's brilliant.
Somewhere.
And George O'Keefe, the painter, talked about walking the knife's edge.
Right.
You're falling off either way.
Right.
Into... you know, saccharine,
right,
or something so dark there's no redemption in it.
I'm intrigued by the fact that you read these to a drum circle. Does that dictate some kind of strong rhythmic base for what you write? Do you write to a strong rhythm?
I don't, actually. I think about the name of the moon poems as given by the Farmer's Almanac or the Native American names for the moon. And some of them are quite poetic. There's one moon, I forget which month, where it's the season where all things ripen, which to me is poetic in itself. So I really use that as a jumping off point. I do have an earlier work that is about rhythm. It's about music, it's about the drum, and I wrote it when I lived in Milwaukee, and it was the first writing class that I took in 2009. Judy Bridges had Redbird Studio, and her required class, her prerequisite before you take any of her other classes, was called Shut Up and Write, which I think is a great, it's a great title, and it was a safe place to write. It was the first place I shared my poetry. So her assignments, I would turn them into poems if I could. And one of them, the first person exercise, I wrote a poem called Martyrs, which is a club up in Chicago where I used to go to Monday night Irish music night. And that poem is specifically about the rhythms of the music.
How did you get started in poetry rather than writing essays or novels or things of that sort, or even taking up writing at all? What led you in this direction?
I think a big influence was an elective class I took at Northern Illinois. I have an art degree, studio art degree from Northern Illinois, and took a poetry class, which was not a poetry class to write poetry, but to learn to look at it deeply. And I took the class from Lucian Strike, whom I found out later was a well-known, world-renowned Zen poet and translator of Zen poetry, and bought his book that was required for class and was introduced to Zen poetry, and that just really excited me. And I later found the poet Rumi and loved the mystical nature of that, and then had a friend with whom I would exchange haiku poetry daily by email. We would each send one or two or three haiku poems. I just kind of came in at it that way. I, of course, had to write essays for school and that sort of thing, but I don't know. The poetry, just the succinct nature of it, the distilled nature of it, really attracted me.
Well, let's hear a moon poem.
A moon poem? Sure. Great. Sure. This is from the first book, and these are collections from the poems that I wrote for the drum circle, and they asked me to put them in book form. And because I have that art background, I did illustrate them as well and self-published these books. This is from Moon Poems 1. It's February 2015, so that gives you the year and month it's written for. The Hunger Moon, Full Snow Moon. And the epigraph is, according to the Native American calendar, the full moon in February is known as the Hunger Moon or Full Snow Moon. Because of the deep snow, it's difficult to find animals to hunt for food. Hunger extends beyond my gut, beyond my limbs, an ache that encompasses this impassable snow. Subterranean critters hunker down, snug in burrows. Skunk, it's okay to make a stink to protect yourself. Prairie dog, it's safe to poke your head above ground. Creatures of the sky, eagle and hawk, scour the landscape for signs of movement and open water. Owl makes warm use of a dead hollow tree. Lithe, gentle deer strip tree branches bare, and fox wraps his bushy tail tighter round him till it covers his nose. But days are lengthening, and today I hear drip, drip, drip as ice turns to water.
Okay, Hunger Moon.
Let me say something about that poem, because one of the things I noticed, and I suppose it was the drum circle dedication that made me look for this, is that you are really fond of a four-beat line that goes back to Anglo-Saxon poetry. And I know that because I briefly taught British lit before I shifted to American lit. Anglo-Saxon poetry has four beats per line with a pause in the middle. Bump, bump, pause, bump, bump. And you can almost hear the drum beat, boom, 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 which is also something we associate, rightly or wrongly, with Native American drumming. And you have an incredible number of those lines. And, see, you don't even know what you're saying, but it's coming out. And so I went through these poems last night and just took down some of those four-beat lines. In real Anglo-Saxon poetry, those beats all alliterate. Or at least three of the four syllables alliterate. You don't always alliterate, but you realize how many of those four beat. So all the way through these poems, there is that drum beat. And the poem you just read has several lines that are four beats, and you pause in the middle with a comma or a dash. For instance, creatures of the sky, eagle and hawk. That's Anglo-Saxon drum beat poetry, right? Let me go back earlier than that. Here's one that alliterates. We seek the heat and huddle with our hopes. Bing, 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 bing. And you do that through both of these volumes of poetry. And so as you read them, underneath where your free verse you think you're going, there is this drum beat.
Interesting.
Bang, 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 bang.
Now the question is, did you think that?
Not at all.
I don't think you have to think that, right? I don't think
unintentional or subliminal or subconscious, I guess.
Yeah, D.H. Lawrence said he bypassed his brain and it came out of his fingers, right? I mean,
yeah, it's
I'm not accusing her of deliberately doing that.
No.
I think it's good that somehow, because she's feeling the poem without even realizing it, you're falling into the beat. It's amazing. It's amazing how often you use that line and how almost always there's a comma or a pause in the middle. Caesura, it would be called in Anglo-Saxon poetry.
That's what impresses me when I look at Shakespeare. I'm sure he didn't plan all this, but English professors have made livings for a few centuries now analyzing it and looking at the structural unity of some of his things and all the little connections and references and so on that I'm sure never occurred to him. And I think that happens sometimes when you are writing and you are in the grip of your inspiration or your concentration. You do things that people later on can take apart and say, oh, look at this. Look at the structure here.
I don't think they're inventing. I think it's really there. It's just that the writer doesn't always aware that they're there.
No, you're not inventing it because it's there. And that's what happens when you analyze stuff. You see things that maybe were not in anybody's, not in the creator's mind at all. But that's something that just fascinates me about all writing, is I think most writers don't sit down and think, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that and follow this plan. You tend to write, and as the inspiration wells up in you, you just keep going. And it's only later when you go back that you find, wait a minute, I didn't know that was there.
And, that's true, yeah, absolutely true.
Yeah, wow. I want to hear some more poetry.
Okay.
Listen for the four-beat line now.
Now I'm going to be really self-conscious.
I learned a couple of things earlier in what you said, that, you know, if one of them is, if you want to sell your works, teach a class and make your text a required thing.
Right. Lucian Strike had that down pretty well. Yeah.
There's a hint for your tweet.
And I don't know if you want to hear, I think Aubrey would be fine with it, a collaborative piece that we did together.
Sure.
And that was a wonderful process, and one of us would start the poem and email it to the other, okay, maybe a line or two, and then it was additive, you know, and then we would add to it, send it back, add to it, send it back, and finally say, do you think it's finished? Yeah, I think it's finished. So April 2015, Pink Moon, Fish Moon, Egg Moon. This is a poem that Aubrey Jane Ryan and I collaborated on. We're pinkest where we yield the way the ground yields to thaw. Pink bud, pink tongue, pink bellies of the salmon on their whipping run. Spawn up swollen streams, egg-ripe whirrings. Den animals stretch, their stomachs rumble. Fecund fields germinate sunward. Go, eat dandelion. Go, lay down in the dirt before you work it. Look how we made it through to where the sun comes to meet us. Last year's foliage and feathers become fodder for the earth. It is time to till and to choose the seeds to plant. It's time to wake, swallow the pink moon, grab it and bursting, we shift tides, rosy to mescent and ever ripe. Pink, pink, pink. So Roald can probably pick out which...
Foliage and feathers. Flowers for the earth. I mean, it's there.
So you can pick out my lines it's in pretty every... easily.
No, I mean, listen.
Yeah, right.
You're Anglo-Saxon without knowing it. I have another question that we almost ask everybody, and that's the old question. As I think it was Coleridge said, poets are born, not made. But on the other hand, it's Emerson that said, people fancy they hate poetry, yet they're all poets and mystic. On the brink of the waters of life, they're miserably dying of thirst. Hmm. Is everyone a poet? Could be? Can you
I
teach
think
it?
It's not always in written form. I think people have a poetry maybe in the way they sing. That's a very good question.
Well, thank you.
But don't you think you have to be to some degree involved in words? You have a very limited vocabulary, when I listen to high school students, I think they don't need much. You know, where are you going? Did you eat lunch? You know, it's short sentences and small words. And at some point, if you are become interested in language, if you, for example, just through reading, don't you think that's some kind of requirement role?
Well, but I think, I'm on Emerson's side. I think a lot of people don't write the poetry, and a lot of people get turned off by it or made nervous by it. You know, it's interesting. If I used to do grade school programs, and you have third graders write something and say, who wants to read? Every hand goes up. Hmm. By sixth grade, half the hands are down. By the time they get to college, every hand is down, and it's tightly down. It doesn't go back up again till Elder Hostel at 65, right? Hmm. Then me, can I read this? Right? There's that awkward age, you know, between
second
12.
Childhood.
yeah, right.
There is a symmetry to life. From cradle to grave, in terms of how you sleep and a lot of things, how you eat, your food gets simpler as you get older, and you begin to nap more as you get older, as a child mm-hmm. does. I've always been impressed by that arc of life that seems to almost be a circle.
Yeah.
Well, do you do a lot of revision?
I do. Sometimes it just falls together and it's very few revisions. Other times I rework it maybe two or three times.
So over a long period of time or?
Sometimes, yes. I occasionally go to the Quint City Poets Group at the Bettendorf Library right. first Wednesday of the month. And they...
I haven't seen you there lately.
I know. I haven't been there lately.
Nor have I seen Roald, I might add.
No, I haven't.
And they, I believe I included them in the...
You did, yeah.
Acknowledgements, because they were a huge help in revision and in tightening these up, making them much, much better poems than... when you're writing in a vacuum, and it just always helps to have an audience and
let's hear another poem.
Sure. Well, let's see here.
This what month is this?
This is August, which seems fitting.
Yeah, well, that's very good. That was just recent, so.
August 2015 is the sturgeon moon, blueberry moon, green corn moon, full moon when all things are ripe. More than once in a blue moon on the cusp of July and August, Sturgeon Bay undulates with fins and the bays of the Great Lakes teem with fly fat life. Inland, the corn grows inches into its yellow and green and perfumes the baking air. Wheat fields ripen, golden heavy heads bob in the breeze. On the shore, blueberries offer their indigo sweetness. Their dark skin bursts, yields to crush of tooth. My own skin, brown as a berry, as Mom used to say, still warm after sundown, transfers heat to sheets as I try to sleep next to my siblings. Driving at night with the windows down, I smell all things ripening. Big Dipper points me true. I hear the promise in deafening cicada song. I follow the sound of laughing water lapping the river's edge, the moon, a path of brightness, solid enough to walk on. Or so it seems. Tonight all things are possible.
This is good stuff.
Yeah, it is. It is. We just have about 2.5 minutes left. Do you want to read an early poem?
Sure, absolutely.
Got a sheaf there. That looks about right.
Well.
Just take one.
My friend Bill said I need to read this, but okay. It's in French, so I'm not sure that'll work. It won the Out Loud Best Poem of the Year.
Okay.
And it was an exercise in future tense. And trying to learn French.
Giving a poem that lasts a minute and a half.
A minute and a half. You know what? Sorry, Bill. We're going to do Martyrs then. This is the first poem that I really ever wrote and read out loud to other people. It was Judy Bridges' assignment in first person.
Okay.
Martyrs. Bzzzt. The first sip of Guinness passes my lips. The ancient recipe spreads warmth from my gut outward. Earth and iron. The 6-8 time beats. Finnegan, Finnegan, Finnegan. The primal thumping of stick on goatskin stretched taut and totter over ancient turf fires hits my own eardrums. Which came first, the music or the dance? Rhythm, the drumbeat, of course, the sound of your mother's heart and the rocking of her hips, your lover's heart and rocking. The rocking, and now I see you through your friend's eyes across the room, short, solid as a beehive monastery on the windswept Atlantic coast. Not a monk in sight, but the electric sacred swirls around your legs. Women sit in rapt attention at the wild stomping of the accordion player's right leg as it matches the Bauron downbeat, pipes keen and drone, the room swirls, flashes of teeth and breasts. Alligator, alligator, alligator. The crowd whoops in a new time, 4-4, the rhythm of the cross over the Atlantic. The River Shannon joins Appalachian mountain streams and winds its way to this night. To this night where skin reigns supreme, on stage and off, the tune stays in time but barrels toward its conclusion. Play, play with me, play. It is a play. I sit filtering the water in my part of the reef, my bend in the bar. You cross the room toward me to claim the beer your friend has left for you to find next to my skin.
And with that poem by Teresa Guise, we've run out of time. I'm Don Wooten. She doesn't get very far from rhythm, does
no,
she?
No, she doesn't. No. No.
All right. That'll do it for this session. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. See you next week on the next edition of Scribble.